Welcome to the Fire and Earth Podcast with your hosts, Jason Mefford and Kathy Gruber. Fire and Earth, giving you the keys to unlock your limitless potential.
Welcome to another episode of the Fire and Earth Podcast. I'm your co-host, Jason Mefford.
And I'm Kathy Gruber, and we are so excited to welcome back my favorite friend, Peter Bedard. Woo! We're excited to have Peter back because his second book is about to drop, and he, before we got on the air, expressed that he's trying to catch up to me. So I'm working on my ninth, he's working on his second. He's got a little ways to go, but we're encouraging that. So
Correction. I have three done. Being published. My third is done. I'm not published yet.
Oh, well, I've got 20 that haven't been published yet.
Well, I've got 50 in my head that I haven't written yet.
There was this one time I thought about writing a book, and yeah. this is going to hell fast. Okay, so anyway, Peter, tell us about your second book that is just about to be published, and then maybe we'll talk about the third too. So tell us what's going on in your world since we saw you.
So the second book is very exciting to me because it's a small book. It's only going to be about 120 pages, and it is about 120 pages, and it's, I really lasered in on things that I address in my practice. So my practice and what people come to me for a lot is anxiety and stress, addiction, empathy. Like, there's a lot of people that are understanding this movement of being an empath and what that means. Mm-hmm. Anger, do a lot of work on anger, manifesting, cancer. Those are the primary topics that people come to me for. So what I decided to do was just create a very small, lasered in, hey, if you're in this situation, here are some things that you can do to help. And it's really fun. I really like this book because it is so specific. Mm-hmm. And it's all the things I like to treat, and it's all the things I like to talk about. So the idea is that this book is also what I do when I go out and speak. These are a lot of the topics that I speak about. One of my favorite chapters. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, because I love books like that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, a lot of times it's like, you know, you get a book and it's 300 pages and it's a good book, but there's like 50 or 100 pages that are really good. And this, right, you know, because it's more targeted in, it really helps people like focus in on, you know, I'm guessing, again, I haven't seen the table of contents yet. I can't wait to get it. But, mm-hmm, you know, that as you go through and look at it, it's like, oh, yep, anger. That's one of the things that I might have issues with, right? Not that I do. Mm-hmm. Don't tell anybody.
Don't make actually, a mess.
I've done very well on that. But I could then jump right into that particular chapter. You know, again, maybe it's, you know, 5 to 10 pages or something like that, something that I can consume quicker, but something practical that I can actually start to implement right away, right?
Exactly. So it's not going to be your be-all, end-all. It's not like my first book, I go into a lot of detail on working through processes and exercises and stuff like that. And so I wanted something that was a little more lasered in and a little more directed towards a specific issue. Mm-hmm. So like I said, it doesn't take you through, it's not your be all end all, but it sets you up that if you wanted to do deeper work, you wanted to come see me or you want to do something like that, then the foundation has been laid for that to happen.
Yeah.
And because I think a lot of self-help books overwhelm you. They give you everything and they just sort of overwhelm you and you put it down and you're like, that was a great read, but I don't even know where to start.
Yeah. So. Right. It throws so much at you. And there's a place for that too. And it's when I did the Alternative Medicine Cabinet, which is my first book, mine's kind of divided that way. You have a chapter on pregnancy. You have a chapter on Bach flower essences. Mm-hmm. You have a chapter. And a friend of mine said, it's the perfect bathroom book because no matter where you pick it up, there's like a short chapter. There's info that you can gain right in that moment, whatever you're interested in. It's not like you have to start at page one and read to page 120. So I love that you set it up that way. So let's talk about this empathy thing, because I agree with you. I hear a lot more people talking about that. And when I first started my practice, I had that problem. I was taking on everybody's pain. I was taking on everybody's anxiety. I still feel emotions of people around me. So especially if I'm in a crowded space and if people are like touching, you know, like if I'm in a crowded bus or something like that, I still feel all that. And I think there's probably a lot of people listening to this that feel a lot, especially given everything that's going on in the media, everything that's going on politically. What are just some quick little nuggets, some little takeaways of how people can stay connected but not be overwhelmed?
Well, okay, so I want to actually talk about that, and I'd really like to talk about my last chapter, which is called The Law of Knowing. Ooh, so okay. if I take a mental note, I really want to jump into that.
Totally.
So, now, the empathy thing. So there's this whole movement in empathy. There's a wonderful teacher that is out there, Judith Orloff. I taught with her last year. She's amazing, right? Mm-hmm. She does amazing stuff. Her focus is always on protection, though. And what that does is it makes your, in my opinion, no offense, Judith, but in my opinion, that makes your world smaller. Because mm-hmm. if you're always having to protect yourself everywhere you go, you're already setting up this situation that there's something to be, that you have to protect yourself from.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this constant weight that you're bringing out into the world that you're looking to draw and attract in. So I think people have to stop. Yes, protection is super important. And there are things to do protection-wise. Like if you know you have a difficult time with crowds, go at the beginning of the event so you can get yourself situated, right? Mm-hmm. Or go very late at the event, miss the couple minutes and go where you're walking in at the last minute, that type of thing. A lot of the work on empathy and protection is energetic. It's mm-hmm. this idea of being able to visualize boundaries, being able to hold yourself in what I call a bubble, right? So that any energy that comes to you is a negative energy. It just bounces off the bubble. It's hard to do because our bubbles, our borders, our boundaries are often permeable. People don't have really clear boundaries. And so a big part of an empathic person, somebody who is that, is setting up boundaries, mm-hmm. understanding where they stop and where other people start. One of my favorite phrases is, it's none of my business. I have to say this to my mom all the time because my mom, oh my gosh, that's where I get it from. My mom feels things so deeply. Uh-huh. When someone's hurting, she hurts, which is a hallmark of an empath, right? Somebody is hurting, they are hurting, and their hurt, I feel, right?
Uh-huh.
So being able to have those healthy boundaries and say, that's not mine. And then to really say to yourself, it's none of my business. I can be present with them. I can allow them to have their experience that they're here for, and I don't have to fix it. So having that mental construct is really, really important for the empath, because most empaths grow up in situations. I found that there's a common thing. There's a lot of mental abuse in the family lives of empaths or mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of drug and alcohol issues in empaths. And this isn't true for all, but when you have somebody who's already sensitive and then they find themselves in these situations like having an alcoholic family or something like that, it makes the experience even more challenging.
Huh.
And empaths often attract narcissists. So it's really important for empaths to already have a lookout for these wonderful people that build us up and make us feel so amazing and are so incredible, but then disappear on us.
Oh.
And so empaths tend to attract those types of people. And we have to be careful that we're not putting out that energy in the world. So I talk about my psychic billboard, you know, that's above my head that I can't see, but everybody else can. And it's advertising, you know, to the world who I am.
Uh-huh.
You know, being really conscious of that and that energy that you're carrying around, identifying those patterns that we walk around in and the types of people we attract.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing, really, seriously, it's so simple. The biggest thing for me in working with empaths is it's none of my business. And there's something interesting about the empath. Empaths are actually, although they don't appear to be, they actually, and this is why they can resonate with a narcissist, not that they are, but why they can resonate with a narcissist. Empaths are often very self-centered.
Mm.
So it's all about them. I don't feel comfortable here. I don't like this. I don't feel comfortable with these people. It's all this me, 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 me type of stuff, right? And if you really break it down, the empath is uncomfortable or absorbing other people's pain. And I talk about the mature and the immature empath. Uh-huh. But the immature empath, somebody in the room is in pain. I can't handle their pain because I feel their pain. So it's not about them. It's actually about me. I hurt so much because they hurt. So I have to help them feel better. I have to fix them. I have to make them okay so that I can be okay.
Right.
And the maturity process of the empath is to recognize when we're doing that, and is it where we really need to be? And is it really our responsibility? And can we let go of this very self-centered type of thing? Mm-hmm. And that allows us to really mature, because the mature empath, man, a mature empath with somebody who is suffering and being present, I see it kind of like the Dalai Lama, you know, mm-hmm. where so present, and this is my observation of the Dalai Lama. So you're so present with someone and their suffering and their pain. And because you can empathize with them, you understand them and witness them at such a deep, deep level. And that creates incredible healing mm-hmm. for the other person. And so the mature empath learns to step into their own power, learns to know what their boundaries are, where they stop and where someone else starts. And just by being who they are, they can heal the world. It's a tremendous thing.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we're talking about empathy and it kind of gone back to the empath personality, right?
Yes.
But a lot of people are talking about empathy. I mean, in fact, because I want to kind of get back around to this, I think one of the most important things is that boundary that you're talking about. Because I'm mm-hmm. actually reading a book right now. It's on negotiation, right? And, you know, we know that from emotional intelligence, having empathy or understanding the other person's feelings is an important part of emotional intelligence. But even in negotiation, the guy that wrote this book, Chris Voss, used to be the lead negotiator for the FBI. So when Americans would get kidnapped around the world, he would be the lead negotiator negotiating with these terrorist groups and other people like that had nabbed people. Oh. And he brings up in his book the whole idea, what he called tactical empathy. A big part of their negotiation and why they were successful was because they would actually be empathetic towards the person who was the bad person, right? And it doesn't mean, you know, the way he describes it is, you know, again, is just understanding the emotions of the other person, explaining that to them, but not having judgment on it. You don't have to agree with it. You don't have to bring it on yourself, but just understanding and explaining and sharing with someone that you understand how they're feeling, that's empathy, right? But you've got to have those boundaries. You got to have those boundaries because, like you said, the immature empath is like, you know, oh my gosh, they're bringing everything onto themselves and feel like they have to solve this person's problem when really all we have to do is just understand the person's problem and let them know. Right. We understand. And like you said, I love that. It's not my problem. Right? Right. I don't have to fix it. I just have to be there to listen and give that mm-hmm. person some support. But I don't have to worry about trying to fix it or anything, because if we do try to fix it, we're just adding extra stress to our life.
Yeah.
Usually we can't control the outcome anyway. And so we're just adding stress to ourselves that we don't need to be adding.
Well, and there's also
exactly.
There's a huge secondary gain to that, because I did an article years ago on empathy for one of the massage magazines, and half the people were like, I think it's a curse. I didn't ask for this. I don't want it. I deal with it the best I can. And others were like, oh, I'm such a great healer because I'm an empath. I can feel your pain and I can get, you know, you could tell they were just one woman. She's like, I can't leave the house because I feel so much. And it's like, can we talk about secondary gain on that and how much attention you need from saying to your friends, no, go without me. I can't feel the things in the bar. You know, it was like, you could tell that half the people were like, look, I have this thing and I deal with it. And the other half is like, oh, let me tell you about this thing that I do because I can't leave the house. And it was just so fascinating to interview all these people to see the mature versus the immature empath. And I'm glad you phrased it that way. Yeah, it was fascinating.
Absolutely. There is such, when you move from that immature to the mature experience, it's like an aha awakening moment. And when you recognize, oh, I've been keeping myself in this small flight like that woman, I can't go out. You know, I actually, you know, I know when I don't take care of myself well enough and I don't give myself enough space and processing time, it's not good for me to go out in a crowd because my boundaries are permeable. So I have to be really, really aware of like, okay, I'm tired. I've been seeing a lot of clients. All I'm going to do is be a sponge and suck up all everybody's emotions, good, bad, and ugly. It's not, you know, being an empath and being around really happy people is amazing. But I have to really monitor myself because I don't want to be in a place where I have to fix people. And something as a therapist that I'm really, really, really moving into is seeing people as whole, perfect, and complete. I've done this for a decade, you know, really observing people like that and coming to their healing like that. It's a different mindset. And to see people as not being needed, as not being wounded, as not needing to be fixed, that who they are, you know, there's who they are is perfect. There's sure issues in front of them. There's stuff that's been dumped on them. There's abuses that have happened to them. And that stuff is covering over their perfection. So my job is actually to reveal their wholeness, to reveal their completeness. And so approaching people not from a place, and this is the thing that I see rampant in our profession, is to stop looking at people as if they need to be fixed, because they don't need to be fixed. Right. Who they are is perfect, and there's not, actually nothing wrong with them. They're coming to you because they're convinced that there's something wrong, but as my job in a spiritual way is to reveal that there is nothing wrong with them and to hold their hand and actually show them. Mm. Because that tumor is perfect. That anxiety they're having is perfect. Now, how do we allow that to actually heal so that the perfection that it was hiding can actually be brought out more? And my focus is always on bringing out the joy, cultivating the joy, because you guys know the 80-20 rule, right? I don't remember if I talked about this before. But so much of us invest our life currency, 100% of our energy, into fixing something we perceive is wrong with us. And when I work with my clients, I encourage them to really only put 20% into that addiction, into that tumor, into that whatever it is. I'm going to consciously, okay, you know, I'm going to work on it a little bit today. Great. But then I'm going to put 80% of all my life currency, my breath, my energy, I'm going to put that into joy. I'm going to put that into doing the things that light me up and make me happy. So part of my process in working with people isn't fixing them. It's actually figuring out what makes them happy. And that could be really tough. It could be really tough. I know that was very hard for me to just really try and figure out, okay, well, what does make me happy? Because ask yourself the question, if I live in my joy, if I live in my happiness, is there room for that tumor? Is there room for that anxiety? Is there room for that stress or that pain or that worry or fear? Right? I have to ask myself every day, because my habit is to go back to all that worry and fear and judgment.
Well, because I was going to say, I think that is one of the things that's so hard for us, because like you said, we're already, you know, whole, perfect, and complete. But it's hard for us to remember that, because like you said, we see that whatever thing it is, right, that we think is just deplorable.
We feel it.
We feel it, right? But the irony is, you know, when you think about people that you love, we love them usually for their flaws. We love them for the experiences that they've had, right? You know, and like you said, you know, I mean, with something like a tumor, you know, somebody going through cancer, you know, a lot of times we focus on that tumor instead of, oh my gosh, I'm such a better person because I went through that. And don't get me wrong, I'm not wishing cancer on anybody, because it, you know, fuck cancer kind of thing, right? But instead, right, if we stop and say, you know, but how does this make me more perfect, whole, or complete? And sometimes it's because it makes you more empathetic too, right? You've gone through certain experiences. You can now fully relate to what somebody else is going through. And ultimately, I mean, who we are today is a collection of all of our experiences that we've had. And we wouldn't be this person if we didn't go through all those things, right? And that is what makes us perfect today. All of our faults, all of our foibles and things that we've gone through in the past make us perfect today. Yeah. You're a wise man.
Yes, the pain teaches us.
The pain teaches us.
I'm only wise because I've been through a lot of crap. Man, I mean, I've had to heal so many things. For those who don't know my story from the previous show, so like I was slammed into the back of a semi truck and I died and I shattered my knee and I split my wrist open. I lost all the nerves in my right hand. I cracked my vertebrae. I had undiagnosed brain damage. I had to learn how to walk again. And I had this cascade of pain symptoms from fibromyalgia to arthritis to asthma to bronchitis to white blood cells attacking red blood cells. And, you know, on and on and on the list goes. So my options were to get more and more surgeries, which are constantly being suggested to me, or to take pharmaceuticals, which were being doled out to me. And I didn't want any of those things. So I had to figure out how to heal myself of things that I was told couldn't be healed. Well, and so this, I'm just sharing, I don't know how wise it is, but I'm just sharing my experience in having to heal myself that from things that I was told were impossible.
Yeah. And I think wisdom, so yeah, that was a good word, Jason. I think wisdom comes from us having an experience, processing that experience, and sharing that experience with others. I mean, that's what wisdom is. And I don't believe there are accidents. I think we all go through what we need to go through to evolve and grow and learn on this planet and this time and this body. And then to share that with others to help them go through those similar experiences. I think this is why pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. We're going to have pain. The suffering comes from our thought processes and how we perceive those things. So, excellent. Before we run out of time, you wanted to talk about your last chapter, Law of Knowing. So tell us what that is.
Yeah, so this is exciting to me because the Law of Knowing is an expansion upon a manifestation, like law of manifestation, right? Mm-hmm. So most people are spending so much time trying to manifest things, and they're doing it by Jason, you had mentioned something earlier about like writing stuff down, right?
Yep.
But if you're only writing things down or you're only saying the words and you're not having a visceral experience with the words, then they're just words. There's no room for the quantum collapse to happen. You have to have words, thoughts in conjunction with feelings. Uh-huh. And so if you don't have those feelings, then you're not getting the full manifestation, the full knowing of something. So we know our pain with great detail. We tend to know our pain, the color of it, the feeling of it, the texture of it. It may feel sharp. It may feel black and dark or muddy or poopy. It may have a smell to it, our pain, all of these types of experiences. And our full brain is involved in the experience of knowing our pain. And yet when I go to most people and I say, so what's the color of your happiness? Or what's the texture of your happiness? Or what does joy taste like? They have no idea. They have no idea. So I like to actually say, okay, we need to know this experience. If you want a healing, if you want prosperity, if you want abundance, if you want whatever it is in the world, it can't just be words. That's why, like, when I did that last time, I love making money. Making money is so fun, and I got really excited about it. I love making money, right? I have to be able, if I'm really going to achieve that healing, then I have to know the color and the temperature and the texture and the sound and the smell and the taste of that understanding. Mm-hmm. I have to really be able to get it in all parts, to activate it in all parts of my brain, to light up every sensual area, every sensory area of my brain. Mm-hmm. And so when I encourage people to know their healing, I'm going to specifically ask them. So if you have an addiction issue, you know what that looks like. You know what that feels like. You know that muddiness and that heaviness and that stabbing, sharp frustration. We know all of those things. Okay. So if we're looking at addiction and we want to shift our attention because we don't want to put all of our life currency into healing the addiction, so we're going to invest 80% of all of our life currency, our breath, all of that stuff into the healing, then I have to know what that healing is. Mm-hmm. And so I ask people to go, okay, well, what is the color? What's the temperature? What's the sound, the smell, the taste? And that is knowing. Because when you know someone or something, you can taste it. You can feel their presence. You see it in your mind. And so to take that into that step of the law of knowing, that's the last chapter of my book. I'm really, really excited to share it with people. It's very lasered in. Mm-hmm. And you can just ask yourself those questions right now, right? What is, and if you don't know what to ask for, like what your healing is, then just use the word joy. Mm-hmm. What is the color of my joy? What is the smell? What's the temperature, the texture? And it was really hard for me to actually be able to do that personally. Yeah. It was really hard for me. And I see some clients because we're so trapped in that obsessive spinning, ruminating experience of our pain. And we're so trapped in wanting the healing. And so we have to step away from that and continue to invest our breath, our life into the thing that we're creating, into the healing itself.
Well, and I love, I have so many epiphanies when we are talking, okay? And
I was watching you epiph.
Oh yeah, you were watching me a piff because it's like the light bulbs are going off, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it's like because we were talking before we started recording about, you know, that I love making money, I love having money, I love saving, you know, spending money on my friends and family, and the energy that you brought with that, right? And like I said, it was an epiphany moment because it reminded me of some other things I'd learned before. And now that I've actually started trying to do that more, I can actually feel the energy shift when I am more animated. And it's funny that you're talking about, you know, like the color and the smell and the texture, because again, you know, I was listening to a guided meditation, and the person said something about what does money smell like, you know, and at first the analytical part of me is thinking, what the hell is she talking about, right? And then I'm like, well, hold it, what does money actually smell like, you know? And to me, money smells like, you know, the kind of that damp cash smell, you know, because cash gets, you know, and you take it out of your wallet and it's like, it's got that kind of distinctive money smell to it, right? And it's just so funny because like you said, as you're talking, it's bringing this in because like you said, in our brain, our different senses record things in different places based on the sense by which we are experiencing that thing. And so again, just to say an affirmation is not the same as trying to visualize it, to try to smell it, to try to think about what color it is, to feel it.
Body.
Yeah. Yeah. And that I think is, to me at least, because I'm still trying to learn this as well, is how we actually do that, right? And I think, you know, maybe you've got some suggestions on that. I mean, you know, being more animated in how we're saying things or trying to think about these, but what are maybe some tips that have worked well for your clients to help the rest of us get more into that?
Absolutely. So the conviction that you speak, you know, to look at yourself and say, the conviction that I have around my pain, I need to have more conviction around my healing and my health and my wellness. Mm-hmm. Right. So to observe that and say, wow, I have so much energy in my pain, I need to go beyond that. Mm-hmm. And so Jason, there's also something when I say, what's the smell of money? You're very literal. You actually, you went to money itself, but what is, cause then you said, you know, money is being able to take care of my family. Right. So part of what you said just a few minutes ago, right, was about that. So it's not really the money itself. It's the ability to express and do things with your family. The money, now doing those things requires money, right? So having money, so I love money. It's not the paper that I love. It's the energy. It's the freedom. It's the experiences that I get to go and do and engage in and all that kind of stuff. So if I now was say to you, what is the smell of money, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe you're going to say, oh, maybe it's that Italian dinner that I took my family to in Venice right after that gondola ride. And so The smell of money for me is the salty seawater and pasta sauce, marinara sauce. That's the smell of money, mm-hmm. right? And notice it's a full sensory visual experience that I just had there, right? Okay. So yes, you can go literal with things, and it's not that it's wrong, but in the energy of money, because when you're talking about money, you're not talking about $100 bills.
Yeah.
You're not talking about credit cards. You're talking about something bigger, mm-hmm. right? And something that has a goal in mind to it, an experience, a physical thing, like sitting in that chair at that table in Venice at that restaurant, right? There's a whole thing about it. So I'm going to ask you now, what's the actual, I love that you just took that deep breath. What is your actual evolving understanding of the smell of money? What is it?
Yeah. So now instead of me being literal, because again, I mean, that's where I tend to go. That's how my brain works. Right. And I'm trying to learn how to do the other stuff, but instead, like you said, it's thinking about an experience, right? Taking care of my family might mean going on vacation to Hawaii. Right. And so again, as I'm thinking about the smell and the texture and the color, right, I would be visualizing more, like you said, maybe the smell of salt water. I'm hearing the waves lapping up on the beach. I'm, you know, feeling the sand in my toes as we're walking along the beach, right? That's kind of more where you get to that other side, right? Okay. Another epiphany, man.
Yes, exactly.
Jason's epiphany all over the place today.
So I want to go just one step further. And now, what's the law of knowing around your health? So what is the temperature, the texture, the color, the smell, the taste of perfect health? What is that? Right? For me, the taste is always, I don't know why, but it's always chocolate covered eclairs with custard, not cream, with custard filling. And I don't even eat those. It's not like something I go, you know, it just is what it is. It reminds me. What it is that experience is my grandfather. It's that experience of being a kid and being taken care of, and that pink box sitting on the table and knowing that I was going to get that. That was there for me. You know, that's that type of thing. That's what that eclair is all about, right? Mm-hmm. So the taste of my happy, joyous, and free of that wonderful, healthy, exciting kind of experience is that eclair. And I don't even need to eat the eclair.
Yeah.
My body, my brain understands that experience just by saying chocolate-covered eclair with custard filling. Oh, right? And I get giddy. I get excited. Yeah. Like, ooh, right? there's a pink box that's just for me that I get to open.
And it's funny too, you're talking about health and then you're talking about a chocolate eclair, right? So it doesn't even have to necessarily be, you know, like, because if I was going to go there to begin with, right, I might think, oh, it's broccoli and I hate broccoli. And I know I'm supposed to eat broccoli, right? But it doesn't even have to be that, right? Like you said, I mean, that chocolate eclair to you, even though it's not a health food, right, it represents that joy and that healthy space to you. And so you use that to help you kind of get into that state.
Mm. Absolutely.
Now I want a chocolate eclair.
Because I don't even have a craving for chocolate covered eclairs.
I do now. Thanks. Thanks, Peter. Yeah, that's so cool.
And
yeah,
allowing, no, you know, Kathy, like one of the skills that we share is our hypnosis work, right? Mm-hmm. So in taking people into hypnosis and then asking those questions and letting the subconscious mind start to dream and start to fill in the spaces, right? That richness that happens when somebody gets to be in a trance, and to ask them those questions, what is the color and the temperature and the texture and mm-hmm. the sound, the smell, the taste of this thing that you are creating in this experience of hypnosis, right? And so it allows the subconscious to be enlisted into the process of creating, whether it's prosperity or health or freedom or harmony. You know, that's a good one. I asked myself that one. What is the understanding? What is the knowing of harmony? Mm. Right? And when I'm in my meditations and I can't kind of quite get in, and I'm getting irritated and I'm sitting in that experience, right? And I just shift my thoughts to, well, what is harmony? And can I be curious about harmony? Mm. And what today is the smell or the feeling of harmony? What is the color of that experience? And can I bring that into my body? Right? Even hearing what I'm talking, like, obviously I've done it before, because my voice shifted into more of a harmonious slow pattern, right? That word has an effect on me, not because of it's the word, but because of how I understand that word, the color, the temperature, the texture that is in my consciousness about that word.
And I love that. I never think of that word. Like, harmony is not a word. I mean, I think about joy and I think about balance. But harmony is a completely different concept. So I'm going to ponder that one. All right. Well, once again, we've blown through our time. I know you talked with Jason about where can people get the book? How are they signing up for that? What is the title of the book? We didn't even talk about that. So give us all that info.
Yeah, so my first book is out. You can get it all over the place. It was published by Simon & Schuster, so you can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can get it on Amazon. I also have the audio version of the book that you can get on Audible and iTunes. It's called Convergence Healing. I'm going to hold it up right here. Convergence Healing, Healing with Energy and Love. I love this book. Love, love, love this book.
I do too.
My new book is available at the end of the year, and it is called How to Turn Your Pain into Your Gain. How to Turn Your Pain into Your Gain. People can get a free PDF copy of the book if they want to go to my website and sign up for my email list. And that's only going to be until October. So if they want to get a copy of my book from now through October, the end of October, they'll be able to get a PDF copy sent to them for free by joining my email list. And my website is Convergence Healing. So just like the title of the book, convergencehealing.com.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's a great thing that you're doing, because again, I mean, this is going to drop October, November timeframe. So if people want to get a pre-read and get it for free and actually start doing some of these things today, all they have to do is go to your website and download it. Yeah. So
that's so great, awesome. I love that you're providing that for people, because this is going to help so many, and I can't wait to read it. I'm going to sign up right now. Cool. This has been another amazing episode. Peter, you're fabulous. Like, we could just talk to you like 30 more times. So we would have to do that. But we must sign off, because, or else it'll be a day of fire and earth, which I'm Kathy Gruber. I can be reached at kathygruber.com.
I'm Jason Mefford. I can be reached at jasonmefford.com. So go out, have a great rest of your day. Make sure to download Peter's new book, and go out and make the day great and unlock your limitless potential. And we'll see you on another future episode of the Fire and Earth Podcast. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.